Brokers, Builders, and Bourbon, a conversation about all the good things in the bluegrass with your host, Mike Warner.
I'll just follow your lead, man.
Welcome to Brokers, Builders, and Bourbon of the Bluegrass. You're following my lead, Ken. That's awesome. You got a great guy. I've got a friend on here, Ken Silvestri. I'm so glad to have you here, Ken. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. It's an honor to be here, Mike.
Well, before we start, this past weekend on Sunday evening, a good friend of mine named Colin Michael and his band Bedford won the Lexington Music Award, Best Guitar, Best Rock Band, Best Album. Congratulations, Colin. That's an awesome achievement. Yeah.
Yahoo. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's
now, great. If only there was a Best Podcast category, because then you could win it.
Golly. I saw where, did Dennis get Best DJ?
Yeah, and they named the award after him. It's now known as, it's forever known as the Dead Air Dennis Best Radio DJ Award, because he's won it so many times.
I love it.
Let him do it again.
Well, so anyway, Ken, sorry, got off track there for a second. I wanted to congratulate them. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being a part of the show.
Thank you.
So tell the listeners a little bit about you. Where are you from?
So I grew up right here in Lexington.
Me too.
Yeah. 324 Henry Clay Boulevard.
No kidding.
Right.
40502.
That's right. Let's see. I started out with the first Kool-Aid stand right there, you know, on the sidewalk.
Nice.
We went to Juilliard UN School.
Sure, which is now the school for the
deaf. Actually, I started at Claxton at Christ the King.
Yeah.
Then I went to Juilliard UN.
Yeah.
And then ended up graduating from Henry Clay in 79.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then I ended up buying a Volkswagen van and moved on to California in 1981.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've got a story to go along with that.
Okay.
But tell me you went by yourself?
Well, so my friend Chuck Hendricks, who's also
a
realtor,
Chuck, yeah.
Right? One day I was driving by and saw him, and I said, Chuck, I said, I think I'm going to move to Ocean City, Maryland. He says, well, why? I said, oh, I'm going to be a beach photographer. Mm-hmm. I thought I'd be taking some pictures on the beach. And he said, well, you know, this friend of our Alan is making all kinds of money in California. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, let's just go there then. So I, you know, sold my car, bought a van, and we drove out there.
That is so cool. I got to tell, Chuck is a dear friend of mine too, and this is going to be a great story for me to give him a call. So my story, I have a similar story. I also was born in 40502.
Okay.
Central Baptist, I don't know if that is, but we moved. My parents were renting an apartment on Romney Road,
okay.
One of those fourplexes.
Sure.
And so, with the exception of the Air Force, I've lived in 40502 my entire life.
Great area.
Great area code. Loved it every step of the way. 1976, I am a junior at the University of Kentucky. I'm going to graduate in May of 77.
Okay.
last semester of college. And the football team's playing in the Peach Bowl. They're playing Penn State down in Atlanta.
You remember this story well.
Yes. So I had a 1968 ragtop Jeep.
Ooh, nice.
Four-speed, had no heat, no air, had an AM radio.
But you look cool.
Oh, it was great. It was great. So I thought it'd be fun to go down to Atlanta to the football game.
Mm.
You know, we're off for school, so mm-hmm. I get in with a friend of mine named Carl Richards, who's passed away, but we drive down to Atlanta. And the Cats win the game,
right.
New Year's Eve at the Hyatt, the ball drops, big time. And I'm packing to come home the next day.
Yeah.
New Year's Day, uh-huh. I'm coming home, you know?
Right.
And these three girls who I knew, they were swimmers at the University of Kentucky.
Okay.
And they said, well, you know, we don't have to be back in class till the 17th. We're going down to Key West. Why don't you all come down?
Oh, man.
So I said, you know, this sounds like a great deal. So we take off.
You don't pass that up.
We take off to Key West. We get down there. Now, I had no money, and this is long before Venmo or anything like that. I had enough money to get down and get back, but now we're talking about extending 2 weeks. So myself and my friend got a job on a crab boat.
Okay.
Crabbing at night.
Perfect.
We would go out, leave at like 2 in the morning, and we'd sleep for 2 hours, and then he'd wake us up, and we'd reel the crates in with a hydraulic lift and throw the crabs on there, and then he would bring us back, and we would get a cup of coffee, and we'd hit the day running, just having fun with the girl.
That's
and we
great.
Did that for a week, and then,
oh, man.
And then it was kind of like, okay, it's really time to come home now. And one of the three girls – said, my sister lives in San Francisco. Would you be willing to drive me out there to visit her?
What?
And I said, absolutely. So in a 1967 Jeep, we left Key West, came up the west coast of Florida, around the Gulf to New Orleans, down through Texas, Austin. I think it's I-40 or I-10. I get I-10 all the way to the West Coast.
Wow!
And
what an adventure!
Yeah, it was so much fun. And my dad, this was before cell phones. When I would try and call home to my mother on a payphone, she would say, "Your dad is not speaking to you." I'd say, okay, that's all right, because he wanted me to come home. But
isn't that just one of the greatest experiences of your life?
It was fabulous, right. Ken. Yeah. I got
you
off
would
track.
Do that again tomorrow.
Oh yeah, I got off track there for a second. But so you do this now. You said you did this right after high school, So did you come back to UK or did you go to college or what happened next?
No. So good question. So I drove out there thinking that I was going to maybe go to UCLA or do something like that and maybe just sort of take some time off.
Yeah, sure.
And so the guy who told us to come out because he was making all this money in California, he was selling this new thing that had just come out.
Marijuana?
It was a cordless phone.
Cordless
phone.
All right.
So we were on the phone. You know, we were telemarketers, basically.
Right.
Hated that after 1 week.
Yeah.
And so then all of a sudden he decides to move back to Kentucky. So he puts an ad for his refrigerator for sale. Some guy shows up to buy his refrigerator and he says, like, what are you all doing? You know, where are you all from? Yeah, he said, where are you all from? And we thought, there's an accent we recognize. Mm-hmm. And we said, we're from Kentucky. He said, well, do y'all know anything about selling? And it just so happened that Chuck and I were door-to-door salesmen. We sold newspaper subscriptions and everything else.
Oh, yeah.
And we said, yeah. Well, it was like a one-channel HBO. It was called On TV. And I mean, literally the next day, we were working for him. And next thing you know, Mike, seriously, we started making like $800 a week back in 1981.
Yes.
And we were I didn't trust banks. We were literally stacking up cash in the closet. Just stacks of cash. First year I came back, I had all this money, so I bought my mom wall-to-wall carpet at the new house. So that's what happened. So then we got into the cable TV business because it was very lucrative at the time.
Sure.
After that,
sure.
So I was really in the cable TV business after that for really
in California,
for all the way from 80. Really, it was probably 81 to 86.
Wow.
No, I'll take that back. 86. That's right. And it was like the only way I can explain it is imagine a $20 bill with a rubber band on it on every doorknob in the city.
Yeah.
And Chuck and I would just run as fast as we could, say, knock on the door. And I mean, sometimes like in apartments, we'd go knock, 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 knock.
Yeah.
We'd knock on 20 doors. And then whoever came out, say, hey, cable TV, you know, we're going to be out here on Thursday.
Or just hang something on the doorknob.
Huh?
Or just hang something on the doorknob.
Well, no, we were getting the people to come out and selling them. Yeah. But it was like there was a $20 bill on every doorknob. Because we were collecting money that fast.
And so
that was a really good time to be in California.
You know, Colin, this might be the most interesting opening segment we've ever had.
You know, I wish I lived in the world where it was easy to make a dollar like that.
Yeah, because you're right. So my best friend in the world, Johnny Atchison.
Great guy.
We met when we were 4 years old, and we've managed to be friends for the next 66 years. We've been friends since we were 4 years old. We had one falling out over a guitar. I bought a Rosewood electric guitar, and I got a little low on cash one time, and I sold it to him with the stipulation that he could not sell it to anyone else except me, and he never sold it.
Okay.
He still has it.
Okay.
So he's held up his end of the bargain, but it's like, I want that guitar back. And so
what kind of guitar was that?
I don't remember.
Wow. What year was this?
1980.
I'm sure that guitar's worth some money now.
Yeah,
You think
he still has it then?
He does. Oh, okay. He admits it. He said, I didn't sell it. My word to you is if I sell it, I'll sell it back to you.
Man.
But it's beautiful. But so same time period as you're talking about, I was in the Air Force. I had left to go to the Air Force, and cable TV was coming to Lexington, Kentucky.
Yeah.
And Baz Mattingly?
I work for Baz.
Okay, all right, okay.
Yeah.
Baz was kind of doing this, and we were all creakers, and he got Johnny and a couple of others to start selling this cable TV gig. But they did not want people to answer the door. They just hung
Door hangers.
Yeah, door hangers on the doorknob, okay. Because everyone was waiting for it. It Absolutely. Wasn't a sell. It just was everyone was wanted taken. It.
Right.
So they hung it, and then they go home and wait for the phone to ring.
Right. Okay, yeah. So when I moved back in 86, mm-hmm. then what happened is that I interviewed with Baz, mm-hmm. and I didn't like their pay structure. Mm-hmm. And so then I decided to see what else was available, mm-hmm. and Cellular One decided to hire me.
Steve Lockmuller.
Steve Lockmuller, and I worked for Steve.
Yeah.
So here's an interesting story. So Steve says, hey, I don't know if you know this, but the home builders and the realtors get a discount on their phone.
Wow.
And so I picked up on that right away.
Yeah.
And so, that was all I did. So I would go out in the morning. I'd go to Waterford. I'd go to, mm-hmm. All these neighborhoods. And if I saw a big, white, beautiful truck or a red truck,
indeed.
I said, there's a builder.
Yeah.
And I'd get out and I'd go walk around. And I just loved the smell of framing. I don't know what it was about that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I'd walk through the house and I'd say, hey, mm-hmm. You're the builder here. And next thing I was selling cellular telephones, right?
Yeah, right.
So that was interesting. And then what happened after that, Mike, was interesting is that I worked for Cellular One, mm-hmm. and then Baz calls me back and says, "Hey, I think you're going to like our new pay structure." So I went over, talked to him, and said, "Okay, I'm in." So next thing you know, now I'm selling cable TV again, right?
Yeah.
And So then, I did that for a couple of years, I guess it was.
Yeah.
And then my brother-in-law from California decided he was going to move back to Kentucky because, my wife's sister. So he said, I want to buy a little business. And I said, okay. So I look in the Herald Leader and I see this Builder Homes magazine for sale.
Yeah.
And so I call this guy and I said, so what's the scoop? He said, well, we sell advertising to builders. Mm-hmm. And he said, give it a try. I'll pay you some commission. Next thing you know, I'm back out at those subdivisions again looking for the trucks.
Absolutely.
And I think maybe Warner Builders was
did.
In there.
I'm sure we did. I'm sure we did.
So, it was all the builders of your time, all the members of the Home Builder Association.
That is so cool.
Yeah. So, but the funny thing was, I never even told my brother-in-law about it. I just bought the business from this guy mm-hmm. that was selling it, and I started selling Builder Homes magazine in the morning, and I was still selling cable TV in the afternoon until Baz calls a meeting one day and says, hey, everybody listen up. There's going to be a change around here, and he shows us this bag with tools.
Yeah.
And he says, okay, what's going to happen is after you sell the cable service, then you're going to install it. And I said, wait, shh, shh, shh.
Yeah.
Everybody, listen up. And there was about 20 of us in the room. Yeah. And I said, listen to this. Click, 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 click. I said, Baz, you have my resignation. I said, this is the only tool I know how to use is a pen.
Yeah.
And so the next day, I was out of there, and I went and got my real estate license, and that was in 1990. So I got my real estate license in April of 1990.
Yeah.
Because then I knew all the builders.
Yeah.
And I went back to all the builders, and I was selling new construction like
crazy.
Perfect
gig. Listen, for our listeners this morning, I also want to just say we've been having a lot of fun this first segment.
A lot of fun.
Usually we do more serious talking, but I'm talking to Ken Silvestri, probably one of the most successful real estate agents that's ever been in Lexington, Kentucky, and we're glad to have him here. One thing I'm going to say real quick before we break for the second segment is, again, I'm coming back to my friend Johnny Atchison. So Johnny was selling for Baz. I was in Texas in the Air Force. By the way, while I was guarding the border in Texas, we never had a war. There was never a war over the border of Texas while I was guarding it in the Air Force. But Johnny and another guy named Hayden Bohannon and Johnny's brother Russell were selling cable TV here just that way. They were hanging them on doors and just waiting for the phones to ring. They sold a package to a lady, and what you don't understand is we used to have TVs that didn't have remotes, right? So when the cable TV system came to town, you had a remote. And a lot of people, that was the first remote they ever...
I know about those TVs.
Okay.
I was born in the 90s, but I've seen those TVs.
These were the first remotes they ever held in their hands. So this lady called up Johnny one night and said, I can't get it off the wrestling channel. It's stuck on the wrestling channel. She said, I got nothing against wrestling, but I need to be able to change the channel. So Johnny and Hayden and his brother Russell drive to this lady's house. They have a remote, and two of them stand outside the house by the window, and Johnny goes in, and you listeners can't see this, but Johnny says, well, you have to point your finger at the TV to make it change. He goes like this, and he'd point his finger, and they would click the channel, and it would change. The woman canceled her subscription. She thought it was witchcraft. I mean, she did. It was crazy.
Oh, that's a fantastic story.
Listen, we're going to be back after the break. Brokers, Builders, and Bourbon of the Bluegrass. I'm your host, Mike Warner with Warner Builders and Warner Realty, 859-421-0800. If you're building, remodeling in Lexington or the Central Kentucky area, please give me a call. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Brokers, Builders, and Bourbon.
Hey, welcome back to Brokers, Builders, and Bourbon of the Bluegrass. We've been talking to Ken Silvestri, Silvestri Realty, Real Estate Realty.
Silvestri Real Estate.
Silvestri Real Estate. And the first segment, I've had so much fun just catching up and laughing about old stories. You mentioned you went to California with the idea, I think you said photography?
Well, actually, I was thinking I was going to do photography in Ocean City, Maryland. But then I didn't know what the heck I was going to do when I got to California.
But really, you're an accomplished photographer, too.
That's true.
But I've seen some of your stuff.
I had no interest in doing photography at that time. It was just, I was just out there, yeah.
But today, I see some of your stuff. It's incredible photography
you're
doing.
Thank you. It's a hobby. It's a good hobby.
And tell me this. I see photography by you of butterflies.
Okay. Yeah.
Right?
I have photographed everything. Yes.
Okay. But is there I see you sometimes with like butterflies. Am I missing something here?
Well,
is there a particular lot of butterfly? I don't know
exactly where that particular image ended up, but I would say photography is sort of also a philanthropy kind of thing because I do is I take a lot of pictures and then I'll donate prints to the apartment association for their fundraisers.
Gotcha.
I'll donate prints for whatever, but I use it a lot for fundraising or I provide it to the, sort of like maybe the apartment association or the Chamber of Commerce, whatever. And,
It's really cool. I've seen some of your work and it's great. So now let's talk about work. You come back from California, you get your real estate license and you go from a new young realtor to, again, I'm going to say one of the most successful, if not the most successful realtor in Lexington in history. How do you get your start?
Okay, love the question. So here we are, it's 1990, and I'm like, green as can be, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so my experience, though, had been in door-to-door sales. Mm-hmm. And also, I was naturally really good at the phone. But really, I have to say, it was going back to the builders that I just loved the builders.
Yeah.
They were just the funnest, just cowboys.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can describe. Yeah. They're just these really good people that are, taking a chance. They're building these homes. So I really started doing two things. I started going back out to the builders, out to the subdivisions, and just meeting the builders that I, that I already had maybe sold a phone to. And that started, so I started getting the listings.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you know that I might be like a closet architect.
Wonderful. And
I love architecture.
Well, we've had several architects on it. Last week we had Joey Nolasco of Integrity.
So then I started doing this thing where I would get on the phone and I was taking some classes, if you will, with this California trainer.
Mm-hmm.
And so it ends up that I go out to California and I go to this conference. There's like probably 2,000 people in the room.
Wow.
a lot of the realtors listening to this will know it. Uh-huh. This is Mike Ferry. His son now is Tom Ferry, and he was the premier trainer of real estate agents, like really nationwide.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm just there wide-eyed, you know, listening to all these agents that are selling 100, 200, 300 homes a year.
Yeah.
And I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah.
And so, but it was amazing because the exposure of listening to how you would, you know, call on expireds, how you would call on for sale by owners, how you would do this and do whatever. And I just bought in hook, line, and sinker. Yeah. Next thing you know, I had this thing that I called Larry King Live, where I actually hired three people to do nothing but get on the phone, and they would call around a house that I just sold, and they would say, hey, this is George. You know, I work for Ken Silvestri. Mm-hmm. We just sold 123 Marble Street. Mm-hmm. And Ken actually wants to talk to you about the house that we just sold because we just got a big number for it. And would you have just a minute that you could talk to Ken?
Yeah.
So I didn't want to have to do all that dialing. I wanted to have three other people dialing for me.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to go like Larry King Live from lit button to lit button to lit button. And then I would—
Genius.
And so that's how I used that strategy. Okay, so Mike, this is a big number. I went from zero to, I was number three in Remax, sold 342 homes my best year.
That 342.
That was, and out of 40 some odd thousand agents, that was number three for Lexington, Kentucky.
That's huge.
Yeah. And,
that's
huge. And it was because I had a system. I was a listing guru.
Yeah.
And I had three really good people to close the deals for me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really, I mean, at one time, we were actually like sending the people home with the real estate sign, and we told them we'd knock $10 off the listing if they would hammer the sign in for us because it would save us the gas. You know, we would just joke about that.
And
they were like, okay, sure, you know, whatever.
I love it.
So that's
incredible.
Part of that was that we went out and we found actually the land for the builders to build, you know, the houses like Jim Ernst. I represented Jim Ernst for many years.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
And so I remember one of the builders was sort of like going out of business. There was all this land over in Andover.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, Jim, I said, you need to buy this land. And then I would say, but Jim, I'll tell you what, if you will build this house with this brick and these cabinets, whatever, I said, I'll bet you $500 I'll have it sold before you're ever even finished.
Nice.
And you know, so that was going on for a while. So we did that, all this home sales up until really about 1990, and that was fun. And then what happened actually was a friend from church called me up and said, hey, Ken, we just bought this little 96-unit apartment building. Would you like to sell it? And I was like, well, heck yeah.
Yeah.
I'd never sold an apartment, but I said, like, you know, what can't I sell, right? And so this was actually at the corner of Palumbo and Man of War. It was called Man of War Apartments at the time.
Sure. I know where it is.
And so we put it on the market, and there was this thing called LoopNet that we put it on, which is sort of like this commercial nationwide thing. Well, Mike, there were the craziest cowboys in the world coming out of the woodwork, coming in from, you know, New Jersey and Florida and California.
Sure.
And we sold my first $5 million apartment building.
Wow.
And it was like, okay, that's it. No more houses for me.
Yeah.
And I just almost like went cold turkey. I just, this is what I want to do.
Well, and this is where I want to bring you in here for that very reason. I mean, I did not know the story how you get there, but the multifamily has always been your niche,
right?
And it's interesting how you get there, and not only listen to our listeners out there, especially the young people who are thinking about getting in this. You went from selling to buying and owning.
That's right.
True. Which I think building that portfolio is how. That's smart.
It's absolutely crucial. One, be your best customer. If you can find an apartment or a single family home, buy it and get it to cash flow $1 a day, that is still worth it because you're making money while you're asleep because, you know, the loan is being paid off. Lexington, Kentucky, you know, all the properties are typically going up in value.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get – And so back in like 1995, we worked out a deal with Jim. We'd say, Jim, you build the house, we'll manage it. And I still own 16 of those houses.
That's great.
And they're paid for now. And, you know, so that gives you that beach walking money.
It does.
That you want. And that's really, really important.
Yeah.
Now, we've also bought some apartment buildings, and we've fixed them up and sold them and made money doing that too. And we still own apartment buildings. And,
yeah.
And it's a good form of cash flow. But for anybody out there, I would still say that even just owning a portfolio of single family homes is just a really good thing to do.
We have a sign in our office that's a quote from Mr. Paulson that says, if you own a home, buy another. If you own two, buy a third.
That's right.
It just makes sense.
Agree more. Yeah. Now, what's happened from that first sale, and I don't know, maybe that was 15 years ago, then we just switched over to selling just apartments.
Yeah.
And so we found ourselves competing with these really big national brokers.
Right.
Right. So we had to just then focus 100% on just selling only apartments. But, you know, and then we're doing a process called a call for offers, which is different than just pricing an apartment building. Mm-hmm. So we collect the financials, like the T12, the trailing 12, and the rent roll, and then we blast it to, I mean, we call it nuking the earth.
Mm-hmm.
We send this thing out to maybe 15,000 potential buyers, and now then we get offers. Maybe like we might get 10 or 15 offers on a property, and then we'll, you know, find the best three, and then we'll work those best three. So it's a slightly different process,
sure.
But we're members of the National Multi Housing Council, members of the ULI. I'm a member of the Home Builder Association, and but it really still takes a lot of work. I mean, I still am on the phone all day long, every day, and it's still fun though to do it.
That is so. I mean, what a great story. So if listeners are looking to buy an apartment complex,
right,
they can reach you how?
They can call me on my cell phone, 859-621-5543. My email address is ken@sylvestrerealestate.com.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, you can go to our website, sylvestrerealestate.com. But we do a thing called a broker opinion of value. Mm-hmm. There's no charge for that. It's like the market analysis.
Yeah.
But the main thing that I would just say, if someone is looking also just to even buy some apartments, is that you really need to understand that, like, somebody may have paid $2 million for a property a few years ago, and then they sell it to you 10 years later for $4 million. Well, the PVA man may still have it on the books at $2 million. Well, when you buy that property, the property taxes are going to be $4 million within a year, right?
Yeah.
A lot of times the brokers don't tell you that that needs to be in your pro forma. You also need to take a look at what's the management fee.
Yeah.
And also you have to look at all these expenses. So we're glad to help someone to understand, because once you take all of your income, let's just say you have $500,000 a year in income, and the cost of running it, you know, $250,000, your NOI, net operating income, is $250,000. If you take your calculator out and you say $250,000 divided by 7%, you're going to get what that property is worth. That's the capitalized value of that net operating income stream, okay?
Gotcha.
But if you're missing a lot of those expenses, oh boy, you're toast, because the cost of your money could easily be, you know, in the sixes today, right? It could even be seven. And if, you know, if your you know, capitalization rate is six and you're paying seven, you're upside down.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So you really need someone to help you understand the expenses. And I have to say this, that I'm an Eagle Scout, and the two young gentlemen that work for me, Brandon Cutright and Robert Jones, are two of the finest human beings. I mean, they're like just fantastic.
Wonderful.
We lose so much business because we tell the truth.
Yeah.
And that's totally fine, because we want the business, but we don't need the business. And we just tell the truth. This is what your property is worth. That's it.
Yeah. So I've got a friend, and I called you about this about a year ago. I have a friend. I'm going to be with him next week. We're leaving Saturday to go to Big Sky, Montana.
Love that place.
Yeah, it's his birthday. He invites us out for his birthday every year. he's what he considers himself as an investor.
Okay.
In apartments.
Right.
And I think I called you about this a while back because because I don't fully understand all that because I think of like a buyer, like I'm buying this. But apparently people invest in the person who buys the property too. Do you put together investment groups?
We sort of stay in our lane on that.
Okay.
Okay. So the buyers out there are the REITs. The private equity funds,
right.
You have family offices, and then you have these sort of like these syndicators.
Mm-hmm.
The syndicators, there's a general partner and limited partners,
mm-hmm.
and they raise, you know, like $100,000 from various guys, and then there's the guy with the big check that
right.
signs on the loan. Your friend mm-hmm. sounds like he's someone who either is personally buys them and owns 100%, or he's maybe a syndicator. And
I think he's a syndicator.
He raises all the money,
yeah.
And you know he gets paid an acquisition fee. He buys these properties, goes in, you know, puts $5,000 a unit in, puts a new vinyl plank, paints them up,
yeah.
raises the rent $100,
yeah.
and he increases that NOI.
Yeah,
that's what
I love that. I love that model. And as a builder, you know, we've tried. And this friend of mine, he's never bought anything in Lexington. He's kind of kicked it around a little bit because I'm here, and he's like, you know, I'd like to do something with you, but he's just never found the right one. But I keep thinking, you know, that's a model that if I could get as a builder associated with somebody who's buying these to go in and as vacancies come up, you know, rehab them, increase the value, increase the rents, increase that NOI you're talking about, how that – would work perfectly.
Mike, that would be a fantastic synergistic relationship for you because yeah. you have the talent to do all that.
Yeah.
yeah. And the resources. Yeah.
Well, okay, so put me in touch. I need to talk to you. So you've got two agents working for you full time. You're at Goodwin Square?
Yes, we're at Goodwin Square.
I love that.
Isn't that a beautiful place?
I love
place?
That. My dear friend Jimmy Richardson's got the
stop by. I have a whole bunch of my art there on the wall.
Okay. Well, yeah. Morgan Stanley, I go in there.
Oh, yeah.
Jimmy, you're listening. You're out in Colorado right now. I know that. We talked this morning, but I want you to know I know you're watching all $14 of mine in that account. I know you are, and I'm really excited about it growing to $15. So please keep an eye on my account down there. Walk around the corner and see my friend Ken Silvestri. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back in about 5 minutes or 3 minutes, actually, with more Brokers, Builders, and Bourbon of the Bluegrass with my guest, Ken Silvestri. Thank you for listening. If you're buying or building in Lexington, please call me, Mike Warner, 859-421-0800, where our commissions are negotiable, but our service is not. We give you our very best every single time. Back after the break.
Welcome back to Brokers, Builders, and Bourbon.
Welcome back. I mean, what a great show. I know all of our listeners are excited about the information we're getting from Ken Silvestri, Silvestri Real Estate, Goodwin Square. They've got a great website. You can see it. They specialize in multifamily sales and acquisitions. And please give them a call if you're looking. And especially, again, I'm going to go back to, like, young people. I like to mentor young people. If you're someone listening to this show today and you think, you know, this could be for me, I'd like to start building a real estate portfolio, please give Ken a call. He would love to meet with you and just kind of guide you through that process. Ken, I am so proud of you. And you don't know why I'm going to say, but I'm so proud of you. You have been married for 41 years to the 41. Same woman, and I think that's incredible. I applaud
Thank
you for that.
Thank
Tell
you.
Tell me about your wife.
Well, you remember me telling you about when I got that job in California?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So we set up a little booth at the L.A. County Fair, the mm-hmm. fairgrounds,
mm-hmm.
and I was a barker, right? And so, you know, all these people going by, and I see these two, you know, pretty girls mm-hmm. walking by, and my wife, Tammy, mm-hmm. was one of those pretty girls, and I was like, hey, do you happen to have on TV? And she says, well, as a matter of fact, I do. I said, well, come over here. I want to talk to you anyway.
Yeah.
So
anyway.
Well, yeah.
I can't sell you on TV, but yeah, come over right, here. Come I want to talk to you.
Yeah. So we started chatting, and oh man, I took the first date was incredible. I took her to McDonald's, got her a fish sandwich with extra tartar sauce. It was awesome.
Oh man,
I tell you, but we got married at Yosemite though.
I love it.
So we made up for it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny you'd say that because that Filet-O-Fish is what the official name is. The Filet-O-Fish.
Filet-O-Fish.
The McDonald's menu. It's on Air Force One. The president.
Really?
Current president, Donald Trump, loves the Filet-O-Fish. And the tartar sauce, he makes them have extra on board Air Force One at all times. That's a true story.
That's great to know. Yeah.
It's so funny. But yeah. But I congratulate you on
Thank
that.
You.
I mean,
Thank
so
you.
Many marriages today don't stand the test of time. And the fact that you all have pulled this off is a real testament to not only who you are, but how you treat each other and how you, we talked earlier, how you connect to God. I mean, right? God brings a relationship together that doesn't work any other way, and I'm so happy.
Thank you. Yes,
my wife Leah, when we started dating, she told me that she said, "I really like you, but there's some things about you I'd like to change." And I'm thinking, why? Why?
But, like what?
Yeah, but she said, "Yeah, I'd like for our relationship to grow a little bit more Christ-centered, get a little bit more involved in church," and I bought into it, and it's the best single thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, I'll make the story quick, but we've had our rough patch. I mean, you can't be married that many years and not have a rough patch, and mine was really rough at a point, and then I just remembered one day, it was in October, sunny, I went for a run, and I mean, Mike, mm-hmm. it was rough, mm-hmm. okay? So, but I was running along, and all of a sudden I see this penny right on my path, walking path, running path. And I turned around, actually went back and grabbed it, looked at it, and I really examined it. And there it was, "In God We Trust."
Yeah.
And Mike, that was a big thing
huge.
When I saw that, because I said, you know what? I think that's what I need.
Yeah.
And I remember saying, "God, I think I need you right now.
Yeah.
You know, can you fix me?" Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you what, it was like being levitated.
Yeah.
It was a moment, and so I went back after that run, and I said, "Tammy, I said, I found this penny. I said, God, you know, can you help me out here?" And I said, "I think I'm a new man." I said, "I don't know what happened." And then next thing you know, we was like, it really did happen, and I got baptized again after that.
Yeah,
and
that's awesome.
So you know, that's been over 20 years ago that we had that rough patch. So yeah, honestly, it's gotten better every day since.
Every marriage does. Lee and I've been married 26 years now, and you know, and it's both of our third marriages.
Oh,
I'm her third husband. She's my third wife.
Wow.
The odds of us making it are about zero.
Just
hover around zero, but and we've had tough times too, but at the end of the day, it's always been a situation where, you know, Don Henley, the Eagles, at the heart of the matter, that song he did, he said, "The heart of the matter, if you get down to the heart of the matter, it's about forgiveness."
Yeah.
And I was not a real forgiving person.
Okay.
And my first two marriages, things went bad. I was blaming, not forgiving. And if you listen to that Eagles song, you know, he says, you know, when you get to the heart of the matter, it's about forgiveness. And that's huge.
And you know, you remember Zig Ziglar.
Oh, yeah.
He said, if you got one finger pointed at somebody, you've got three fingers pointing back at you.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah. So, that's true. But you know what? You brought up something a minute ago, and it made me think of it. You're talking about the Air Force One.
Yeah.
But you were a badass fighter pilot, right?
You're very kind. I like to remember
myself
that way.
More about that.
Well, I remember myself that way. I'm not sure that today.
You can't be a fighter pilot without being a badass.
Well, thank you, sir, very much. So yeah, so I mean, I graduated the university. I told you I had a hiatus. I've explained that. I left a semester before graduation in 77. My dad, when I came back, I kind of mentioned my mother forewarned me. He's not happy. You know, she didn't come back and finish your last semester. And so he put me to work.
Okay.
And
smart man.
Yeah, he's, you know, I wanted to go back to school. He said, "No, you left school, that's part's over. You're working now." So he put me to work as a carpenter.
Uh-huh.
And I was a decent carpenter. I was a pretty good carpenter, but I was working for him and my grandfather, who was also part of the company in that time. I'm talking 1977 summer when I should have graduated, but we came back. And we worked together for 3 full years, And really, that was a special time in my life because I had my dad and my granddad and me.
Oh, man.
And it was just the three of us because we were all three only children.
Yeah.
And we hung out together. We did everything together. But I can remember so vividly one day they said, meet me at Bob Evans on Richmond Road for breakfast. I go, I'm in, Dale, granddad, dad, I'm in. And we get there. And if you start to remember 80, 81, the political climate and the interest rates were sky high.
Yeah.
18%.
Not good.
Yes. And things have slowed down. And so we're sitting in Bob Evans, and my grandfather says, I'm going to retire. I've had a good run. I'm going to retire.
Hmm.
I said, well, we called him Pap. I said, mm-hmm. Pap, you deserve it. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad said, well, I think I'll farm. We had an 86-acre farm, and we raised cattle and tobacco. And he said, I think I'll farm for a while.
Huh.
And then there was a pause, then they both looked at me and said, what are you going to do? It was an intervention before that word existed. They had an intervention with me, and I said, you know what? They had both been in the Air Force. My dad was in the Air Force. My grandfather was in the Army Air Corps. And I said, I think I'm going to join the Air Force. They said, I think that'd be great. So kind of like joining the circus, I ran off and joined the Air Force
I'll be darned.
In 1980. And at the time, Ken, thank you for having me. The Vietnam guys were all out, and they were joining the airlines.
Okay.
And the Air Force was really short on pilots. And so when I walked in, I had a aviation background. I had my pilot private license. And so when I walked in, they said, what do you want to do? I said, well, I've got my license. I'd like to be a pilot. And they said, well, you know, when can you leave?
Really?
I said, yeah, pretty much immediately. I said, my grandfather and father just fired me at Bob Evans, so okay. I'm available. So they said, yeah.
Timing is good.
Yeah. So within, that was February and March, I was in basic training. In June, I was in,
How long you been out of UK at that time?
Since the Peach Bowl at New Year's Day of 1976.
So you'd been out of school for 4 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then it was in San Francisco, remember?
You were 27 years old, 25.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you had to be in pilot training by 26 and a half years old, or you could not do it.
Yeah,
so,
that's why I'm going to the motor.
So you're doing the math. Yeah, you're doing the math. So, but I also had to have a college degree, so I went back.
That's what I knew, so that's why
I went back real quick, got that last semester done at night, and nights and weekends, however I could do it, got that done behind me, and joined, and a pilot, you know, basic training, officer training, and then pilot training. I mean, they just boomed it together. And suddenly, in 1983, I was a full-blown F-4 fighter pilot.
Whoa.
Stationed at Bergstrom Air Force Base in Texas, Austin, Texas. And we were having a ball. I was in a NATO squadron.
Oh, man.
I was one of only two Americans. Wow. And I've told this story before on here, but it's the best. This is a true story. Can't put this in it. This doesn't happen in everyday life. I'm one of two Americans in a squadron of 26, 13 pilots, 13 navigators, flying an F-4 in Austin, Texas. The West Germans, Brits, and Australians made up the bulk of the class. The other American in my class, I'm out of training now. The other American in my squadron was a man by the name of Steve Lindsay. He's from California. He went on to become a test pilot. Then he went to NASA.
Wow.
He flew seven space shuttle missions.
Wow.
He flew John Glenn when John Glenn went up.
Whoa.
He was the mission commander on that flight.
Wow.
And we still keep in touch, not as much as we used to. You know, you go from monthly to yearly to whatever.
Yeah.
But thank you for having me. I mean, my time in the Air Force, I'll never, ever –
yeah.
You know, it was the best time of my life. All I had to do was get up, strap on an F-4, and go out and fly.
Yeah.
And it would go, McDonnell Douglas said top speed 1,600 miles an hour, 2.5 times the speed of sound. We never flew it at that, but that's what it was rated for. But
what's the sound barrier?
600.
So in the last Top Gun movie, when he crashes and he gets and they go into that and they steal that.
That
was an F-14.
That's not what I flew, but it was very similar.
Okay.
I mean, so the F-4. That's a great question.
Before the 14s.
The F-4 was before the 14s. It was developed in the 50s, but it was the only fighter. It's the only airplane.
Space shuttle off of it. They look the same.
It was the only airplane ever that flew Navy, Marines, and Air Force.
Okay.
It flew off carriers for the Navy. Marines and Air Force flew it air to, ground to air. But, that film you're talking about.
I think about you every time I watch that movie.
Yeah, please do. Watch it often. Think about me often. No, but that moment when Tom Cruise gets in that old F-4 that's in mothballs in a hangar.
Yeah, antique.
Every fighter pilot that has ever lived has dreamed of that moment. And I have dreams today where there's an F-4 setting somewhere, and I get in it, and I figure out how to get started again,
man.
And I'm off flying.
Dream.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It's amazing.
Well, and Mike, I just want to say, first of all, again, thank you for your service.
Well, thank
because
you.
I really respect you for that. And I think that is part of the fabric of the integrity and your work ethic that I respect so much about you and, and having known your father.
Yes.
And actually, I got to lease some office space over on Eagle Creek
and I own one of your chairs.
Yeah, I owned actually two of your chairs that your dad sold me.
I love it.
The integrity of the projects that you guys have built.
Thank you.
The way you just tell the truth and do the right thing. It's just been fantastic.
So thank you. It's a changing industry, Ken. We're caught in a little bit of a transition period. My three sons are all with me now.
Good.
Chris, my middle son, really runs the company.
Good.
From the books stuff standpoint, Blake, the older, and the younger Tommy. But it's time for me to step aside because the old way of doing things doesn't work today. The end product is the same, but just like you were talking about selling cell phones for Cellular One with Steve Lockmuller, the transmission of information today is so fast.
I agree.
And people expect it, and I'm just I still can – if you give me enough time, I can give you the product you want. But today, the schedule gets compressed.
Yeah,
the money is bigger, and the combination of those two factors make it a very difficult profession to be in. But Blake, Chris, and Tommy are going to do it, and they're excited about it.
They've had great training.
They have, and I had great training. But,
yeah,
but it's a lot of fun, and we've got into. So today, Ken, and you were talking about again with Jim Erst. By the way, I love Jim Erst. You were talking about some land in Andover that was available. You convinced him to buy it and build. There's not much land left in Fayette County. So today, we're reinventing ourselves as remodelers. That's our niche, if you will. I would love to build a big house, but my dad built in Shadeland, Lansdowne, Merrick, all these subdivisions where there were lots available. You go buy a lot, Andover.
Yeah. Well, you're smart because there's 100,000 homes out there that could probably need some remodeling.
Need some help,
And people should realize that the smartest investment they can make is to remodel the one that they already have.
Absolutely.
Because going and buying something new may not be as, you've got all your landscaping and all that.
Yeah.
So just let loose the money and call Warner Builders.
Well, please. Call Warner Builders 859-421-0800. Mike Warner, I'm so glad.
No, really, but I'm so glad to hear about that. Your sons have taken over.
Yeah,
and these two young gentlemen who work for me they're like sons to me. Mm-hmm. They are. And but you're right. And they are a whiz at the computer. They got the numbers. They just have all the technology. Yeah. And it's just great that I can mentor them and I have some old connections.
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, we sold a property for Johnny Acheson.
Oh.
Not more than, it was like maybe 3 or 4 years ago.
I love it.
Yeah.
And I was with Johnny this morning. I mean, we laugh. You talk about, and there's another guy. Do you know Warren Rogers?
No.
Okay. No. Well, Warren,
know his name, but I don't know him. Well, yeah.
The Rogers, let me get this straight now. The W.R. Rogers Company, they were in wastewater and freshwater treatment plants. Warren is Johnny and mine's age. We're all 70. Warren, his father was nicknamed Jolly Rogers, the pirate.
Okay.
And it was a cutthroat industry. I mean, you know, it was the wastewater treatment plants were, you know, you bid it, you get it, and then you figure out how to make money at it.
Yeah.
And Warren, when his father died, Warren took over and called a group meeting with all the senior project managers and said, we're going to start doing things differently. We're going to bid it correctly. We're not going to look for ways other.
Yeah.
We're going to have integrity and move this thing. And he said half the guys left the room, walked out, said,
wow,
you'll never make it like that.
Okay.
And but today, well, he just sold the business and retired. But Warren, Johnny Acheson and I met each other at Hunter Presbyterian Church in 1959.
Okay.
As 4-year-olds in preschool.
Really? Wow.
And so we all three were together this morning. Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
We're 70 years old and the three of us had breakfast together this morning. There was a time when there were five of us. Doug Farrell passed away and Kevin Foster passed away.
Yeah.
But five of us met in 1959 in preschool.
Wow.
And have remained friends.
See, that's rare.
The years.
And see, Chuck Hendricks moved down the street from me on Henry Clay Boulevard. Yeah. His mom brought him up when he was maybe, I don't know, 5 years old.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, we're shoveling snow together, raking leaves together.
It's that work effort.
Yeah. And we had breakfast, you know, just 2 days ago together. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we've been just best friends all of our life. And, you know, it's such a special thing to have a friend like that.
It is. I mean, Warren.
A lot of people, I would wish that for anyone.
Warren, if you're listening this morning, Warren, which I hope you are, Warren is the guy who Johnny and I have, like I say, we've just had a lot of fun.
Sure.
Johnny and I have had a lot of fun. Warren is the guy who calls me up out of nowhere in 2010 and says, you know, they had this earthquake in Haiti, and I've been sponsoring a kid through a Compassion named Fednerson, and we can't get in touch with him. Would you go to Haiti with me and try and find him?
Wow.
And I go, well, yeah. Why not?
Wow.
And there's a YouTube video out called Finding Fednerson where by the grace of God, we landed in Haiti, and this was 4 weeks after the earthquake. The landscape is barren. There's no customs. You pick up your bag and you walk into Haiti. If you ever want to disappear for the rest of your life, that was your chance.
That's how you do it.
You could do it. But
we
walked in there, and from that moment, everything, God just had this plan in place. We were on first class, which we got bumped up to. We were in the back of the plane. We got bumped up first class. Had we not, we got off the plane first, and I'm standing there. We're trying to figure out how to get a ride to this place where we were going, to where this boy lived, and there was another American over in the crowd, and he was like waving at me, like, come over here. And I walked over to him, and he said, where are you going? You know, like, what are you doing here? And I said, well, we're going to try and find this kid, and he lives in this city, and we're trying to get some transportation.
Mm,
he goes, I'm here to pick up a group of doctors from Iowa. We're going to that same city. You want to ride with us? I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But if we're at the back of the plane, we don't make that connection. We're front. We go out there, and we are at a Spanish Marine MASH camp. And at this time, Ken, and I'm not going to, you know, thank goodness this is radio, not television. There were corpses lined up on the side of the road where they just had pushed them over the side. Whoa. We get to this camp, and the first night, everybody's going, well, you know, introduce yourself. And so all these doctors from Iowa are introducing themselves, and one of them had a daughter who came along. She was taking photography at Iowa State, and she was filming the whole thing. And they come to Warren and I, and Warren stands up, and he goes, well, you know, we're trying to find this kid that I sponsored in Compassion. We haven't heard from him since the earthquake. And, you know, so that's that. And one of the Spanish Marine doctors comes over, and he goes, I'll put you in touch with this interpreter.
Yeah.
At least he can get you going the right direction. The interpreter comes over, and Warren shows him an 8.5 by 11 picture, says, we're looking for this kid. He goes, I know that kid.
Huh.
Warren goes, is he alive? He goes, oh, yeah, I'll bring him here tomorrow. I mean, it's just like that kind of thing. But Warren, so he takes me to Haiti. And then 5 years later, he says, you want to go to Dubai? I go, sure, let's go to Dubai.
Yeah.
And he says, well, I'm thinking about putting a wastewater treatment plant over there. They don't have any wastewater treatment there at all now. They got a desalination plant, the world's largest, but they're dumping their sewage out in the desert.
Oh, man.
And so we go out there. And again, Warren, if you're listening, I've only been in trouble twice in my life, and both of them are with you. In Haiti, I thought we were probably going to die, but we made it back. And the second one was you hit a police car, and Captain Achman brought us to the police department and was threatening us with our life. We had a great time.
Yeah.
Ken,
okay.
Where did the hour go?
Yeah, fast.
I don't know. This I just got another. Yeah, and I've rambled a little bit, but
23 minutes on this segment.
Well, listen. Thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Thank you for
having
me.
Tell everybody again how to get in touch with you.
Yeah, Ken Silvestri at 859-621-5543. Ken at SilvestriRealEstate.com. SilvestriRealEstate.com. realestate.com. And I would also recommend, last thing is, everyone should read Think and Grow Rich.
Yes.
How to Win Friends and Influence People. And then the new book that I like is 10X is Easier Than 2X.
Yeah.
And
Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill?
Napoleon Hill.
Okay, yeah. Great author.
That's one of the best books ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I read that book back when I was like 10 years old, mm-hmm. and one line stood out in it, which is, every adversity carries the seed of an equal or greater benefit.
Wow.
So no matter what happens to you, you look for the good in anything and everything.
Yeah.
So there is, like, you're invulnerable to adversity. You're invulnerable. Yeah. You know, nothing happens to you because you're always going to find the benefit.
Well, I'm a positive thinker. That's the way I just am wired. So if you are building in Central Kentucky, please give me a call, Mike Warner, 859-421-0800. We'd love to talk with you. We do new homes. We do remodeling and additions. We love the horse industry. We understand the horse industry. If you're building barns or developing a horse farm, please give me a call. If you are in the bourbon industry, we're drinking tonight Yellowstone, which is a delicious 90 proof. I would love to talk to you about expanding your bourbon platform. So that's the end of the show. 96.1 The Hound. I just want to thank you again, Colin, for allowing us to come into your studio and be a part of this. Yeah, I mean, the music, this is all local music. Ken, you don't know this, but the Hound Studio there's no corporate sponsorship. They play the music they want, and it's extraordinary. So thank you very much. Yeah. That's the end of our show. We do a howl. If you don't mind, we kind of do a howl at the end of the show.
Okay.
To let people know, because it is the Hound Studio. So signing off from Brokers, Builders, and Bourbon of the Bluegrass, I'm your host, Mike Warner. My guest, Ken Silvestri. This has been a great show. Give us a call. Reach out. Listen to 96.1 The Hound. Signing off.
Listen to Brokers, Builders, and Bourbon, presented by The Hound, 96.1 FM. Saturday mornings from 7 a.m. to 8 a.m., followed by the Horse Racing Radio Network from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m.